everyone, and welcome to Drukama Radio. I'm your co-host today, Carl, and we're very grateful and pleased to have Daishi with us again today. Daishi, may I ask how you are doing?
I'm doing great. You sound wonderful. What are we talking about today?
Today, we're talking about failure and the path.
Failure and the path. Sounds like life. Great topic. Let's dive in.
Great. What is failure on the path from your experience?
Failure is success on the path because everything in life is about failure. And I think we made bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter in the regard that we see failure as something bad and negative, but it's in that moment of failure that we actually have breakthrough and we actually can become awake and aware. And so when we look at failure and we ask, what is failure? What does it really mean? Failure is the moment you wake up. It's the moment that you notice a change in state. So failure is not a bad thing at all. It shows you that you've woken up from maybe a condition of unconsciousness and you become conscious. In that regard, failure is wonderful and, by the way, mandatory. You have to have failure. It's part of this evolutionary process, part of waking up.
As I'm on the path and I'm judging myself, what is successful? What is failure? You know, I'm just wondering, what am I looking for?
It's a good question. And most people will ask, you know, if I'm on this particular path of evolution, I'm trying to become more awake and aware and more conscious of my own process, trying to understand myself better, understand the world a little bit better. How do I know I'm progressing in that regard? And this is really difficult. And it's the reason why you need kind of a group to help you. And you need kind of somebody that's been through it or is going through it with you. Because trying to judge yourself through the faulty filters that we're trying to become conscious of is impossible. It's difficult at best. Okay. So when you look in the mirror every single morning, it's very difficult over 10 years to notice the changes. They're too subtle. They're too gradual. And they happen too frequently to really notice any kind of change. But as I've said so many times, when we see somebody that's come together on the path and then gone away for a while, maybe 6 months, 3 months, you know, even a year, and then they come back together, both of those people recognize enormous changes in each other. And all the people that had surrounded them for that time through those 3 months or 6 months or year didn't necessarily notice such great changes. So it's really hard for a practitioner to notice what we call success or failure. We really only want to notice wakefulness in each moment. So we want to notice when we feel like we're failing. We like to associate negative, fearful things to our conditioned states. We want to judge ourselves fearfully and sort of negatively most of the time. And when we see that wakefulness happen within our path process, we typically have a choice of seeing it positively or negatively. And most of the time we say it's negative. Oh, I failed. I made a mistake. I screwed up. I wasn't awake. I wasn't aware. I was in egoic mental aggregate self and so on and so forth. So when we see that, it's important to notice just what it is without filter, just to change a state. I just became wakeful. Instead of saying, oh, I failed, it actually can be seen as a positive, but it's best to see it as just for what it is, a wakefulness. So the moment you see those wakeful moments coming closer together, that would be one way to judge that you're doing better. In other words, I have a bunch of failures all day long. That's actually a positive thing. It means you're noticing a bunch of waking states repeatedly coming back to you. And from an egoic mind, that's, oh, you're failing everywhere. That'd be terrible. But from the perspective of the seeker, that's a fantastic thing because that means that you're noticing yourself many times throughout the day. You're waking up many times throughout the day and you're noticing all these little subtle nuances and changes of state. That's phenomenal. That's actually monumental and that actually leads to great realization. So if there can be self-judgment and self-assessment, that's the best way to do it, is to see how many failures you're having. It shows you how much correction you're receiving. It shows you how much you're waking up. Now, there are also ways of seeing success and more advanced portions of the path, like how I can control the inner energies of the body and so on and so forth. That comes later on, and that comes from a clearer perspective generally. So you've already kind of moved through a lot of the beginning kind of foundational corrections and you've come from a deep slumber and started to awaken more to your process. But really in the beginning, it's just to notice how much failure is happening. And if there's a whole bunch of failure, you're probably doing really well and you're noticing things precisely as they are. And you'll probably be able to see that reflected back by the group and by the teacher or teachers, whoever's helping you and aiding you along that path.
Something else that comes to mind is during this driving for wakefulness, there can be distractions. Can we talk a little bit about distractions?
Failure can be distraction. So those two words are interchangeable. And again, the whole reason one undergoes this kind of process is because they're dissatisfied with what's going on in their lives, what's really happening within them. So there's some issues inside, and there's usually dissatisfaction toward the state that they see outside the world. Something's wrong out there. And eventually, as they realize there's not going to be any satisfaction out there ever, we turn within and then go and figure out what's going on within so that we can kind of heal that first and then go to the outside. So distractions are just things that take us away from that objective or that intention. So if I want to be in my own energy, I want to be watching my own mind stream, my own thought stream. If I want to be watching myself, my speech, my actions, my emotiveness, my mentation, if I want to watch all these things, distractions are things that draw me away from that intention, that aspiration. The more that I'm watchful, the more that I understand my process, what seems to be more consciousness comes, more wakefulness comes. And that wakefulness can be very blissful, very ecstatic, can be very freeing, it can be liberating. I mean, there's all these words we can tie to more wakefulness that are amazing. It's the reason why we're trying so desperately to get people to get through those corrections so that they can experience that grand wakefulness or extraordinary awareness state. But it's difficult when I feel like I'm just failing constantly and I'm not recognizing that those failures or those distractions are actually positive signs that I'm becoming more wakeful to the process. So distractions can come in the form of outside, you know, family influences. They come in the form of job problems and, you know, employment, money issues. They come in the form of romance and relationship issues, sibling issues, friendship issues, issues with your local community, with the state government, federal government, with the world governments, the play that the world has. All these are outside distractions, macrocosmic distractions. And then there's inside microcosmic distractions as well. We call thought stream, the song playing repeatedly in your head, the crazy ideas that you think are only yours and no one else has, which is not true. You know, I want to murder my neighbor's dog and I actually saw myself hanging it. It's sick and terrible. And, you know, everyone, these aren't our thoughts. These are just thoughts. They just come to everybody equally like this. Some of the silliness that we see in our mind that we think are very unique to us, we call distractions and we tend to judge. Those are very universal thought stream processes that happen within every human being. We all have the same brain, the same nervous system, a little bit different societal influences, but we have all the same kind of process happening. So if we just step back in cognition and say, I just want to watch, anytime the mind, the emotions, the speech, the action, or the outside world comes in the way of that and distracts us from that aspiration to watch, we call it a distraction or straying.
You mentioned the word corrections, and I'm just wondering if corrections can be part of distractions and maybe a self-perceived failure on the path. Can you tell us more about corrections?
Yeah, and it's a very negative term, but it's a true term. A correction is when we change a habit energy or eliminate a habit energy more specifically. So the trouble with everyone is this, we're unconsciously habit-driven. And because we're unconsciously habit-driven in our minds and our emotions and our actions, our speech, the outside world becomes habit-driven, echoed back to us. And we're dissatisfied with the unconscious reflection we see in the world. Like nothing new is happening. Nothing grand is happening. Nothing special is happening out there. And I'm getting frustrated because nothing grand, nothing new, and nothing special is happening within here. It's actually just unconscious echoes, right, going on and on. So this habit energy has to be eradicated, revealed, and let go. And that happens when we become very mindful of that habit energy pattern. So, and again, I'm talking about the foundational process here. This is the beginning parts of what somebody would describe as the spiritual process, although that word's been used and chewed up. But the way that we evolve and become more consciously clear and get to an extraordinary awareness is by first setting a foundation of getting rid of or revealing, at least revealing, these habit energies. And so we become awake and aware to them. And once we see them, once we notice them, their usefulness is used up, right? The habit energy is simply there for us to notice. And once we notice, the usefulness of it is no longer necessary. And since the universe is so perfect in its use of energy, it goes away. So once we start to notice, you know, oh, that's a terrible habit. I just noticed it. I just saw it. And whether I grade it as good or bad is irrelevant. It's just an unconsciousness happening. Then I sort of start waking up to that part. Then I notice another unconscious thing happening. Usually, again, we judge it, which is wrong. We shouldn't judge. We should just look and say, that is unconscious, and I remove that habit energy, and suddenly the echo back from the world will change. But these are all what we consider correction. So as we're wakeful and we watch these things and set the right kind of foundation for that bigger life energy to come and visit us, we are kind of communicating with the universe by saying, I am becoming wakeful to my unconscious patterns. And because I'm becoming wakeful, I'm changing my attributes. So as I become more wakeful, the attributes of who I am and what I am change. And because they change, I draw closer to that universal energy and it becomes louder and stronger for me. I start to merge and unite with it. So we have to have corrections because that light isn't going to change all of its properties to fit us. We have to change our properties or our wakefulness to fit into it. It's already awake, it's alive, and it's everywhere. We have to reveal it. And for us to reveal it, we need to change our properties, our attributes through corrections, through wakeful corrections. And so once we come in contact with this, we say stream entry or the place where we touch this beautiful life energy, then we can, by understanding it, communicate with it in different ways. That's more advanced parts of that process. But in the beginning, I know that in the state I'm in now, I've created a sheath or a block between me and that universal energy. I've sort of covered my ears and screamed in the corner, no, 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 no. And so in order for me to hear that energy, to see, to feel, to taste, to touch it all, I have to remove my hands, open my eyes, and lower my voice. These are all corrections. And so you can say that the universal energy in that story or that example I made was always there. It was always loud. It was always prevalent. But I was blocking it somehow because of my fear or habit energies, whatever we're going to call that thing. So corrections are mandatory. And that's the part of the path in the beginning when we're really scrubbing all these corrections where we need the most help because it can feel defeating. Again, we go right back to the topic. It can feel like failure. And it shouldn't be seen as failure. It's actually advancement. And that's where we need guidance.
For people who feel a little gung-ho and they're connecting with this idea around corrections and the importance of it, maybe they're interested in speeding up the path. They are seeking really a shorter-term process. Is there a way to ask, to cry out for corrections themselves?
This welling builds up, and it's perfectly timed, but it doesn't seem perfect time to the practitioner or the seeker. Because there is a welling up of this cry out for correction, from the practitioner's vantage point, it seemed ill-timed. In other words, it's not happening yet, and damn it, I want it now. So there's a problem going on. I'm not being corrected fast enough, and I'm not moving fast enough, and I think from my vantage point, something's wrong, and I'm blaming the light. But what really happens is this welling up sets the proper intention, and this wave at some point hits the practitioner simply because of that rubber band effect. Practitioner kind of stretches out, and then that big, huge kind of welling happens, and the wave comes and smashes that practitioner. And then the practitioner goes through this huge stage of massive corrections, overrun by the waters, trying to restabilize and balance, trying to find the surface, floating up there and finding some air, and then stabilizes and says, oh my Lord, stop, 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 and then kind of settles in on a new state, and then begins the process again of kind of saying, okay, I'm ready for more, and more waves come. And this is how it works. So there's a rhythm and there's a cycle to this. And so that must be understood by the practitioner that, you know what, I'm in a holding pattern. Although it feels like nothing's happening, I'm getting frustrated or I want to move forward. I'm actually building a wave of correction that will come to me at some point. And I better be ready for it because I'm actually fighting pretty hard to have it come and hit me. And in most cases, it's either, you know, the practitioner seeker feels like it's overwhelming. It's too much. Oh my God, stop, please have mercy. Or they're able to surf with it if they have the right kind of help and guide. And that's really important. But always from the vantage point of the practitioner, because of our filters, we're always judging and overanalyzing what's right and wrong, what's fair and unfair, you know, what's balanced and unbalanced. But it's really not right for us to see it that way. We need to see it more like a scientist and just say, it is what it is right now. And regardless if I see it as good or bad, the state I'm in is the state I'm in. Now, if I want to become more wakeful in that state, I can increase my intention and aspiration, no problem. But then expect to see more failure, which will feel like you're going backwards. So we have to be aware of how the process, the more we move forward, the more it feels like we're doing worse. We have to be aware of that. And if we're not at the stage where we're conscious enough to see that, we need someone next to us saying, yep, you're doing fine. Don't worry, right? Remember. And that will help us actually get through this. And this is one of the reasons, as I finish the thought, why so many people start the path and stop the path and start the path and stop the path and start the path, because they're not really understanding this process well enough. So they're going and thinking, I want to, you know, become more aware and evolved, and I should just be able to sit down and angels come and minister to me. And, you know, the light fills me up and everything's joyful and peaceful. And it was just easy and simple. And that's not happening, because that's not what the path is really about. The path is about correction, and the path is about becoming wakeful. And it doesn't have to be bad, although it might feel terrible at some points. This change is basically the only way that we're going to introduce ourselves to a stronger, brighter consciousness.
Going back to the word failure and success, it seems like it's opposite. It seems like my desire might be to be successful on the path. That's what I've been conditioned to be in life, is successful, to win, to obtain. And yet what I'm hearing is there's a great benefit to the failure. And as you've said previously, a lot of the path is letting go. How do we measure success? Can you speak more along that?
Sure. So one of the things, and you can tell, you know, we see a monastic person or somebody who's searching and seeking for self-correction or self-awareness, and these things at some point becoming almost unmovable, right? We'll see people sitting by the side of the road or sitting in meditation or sitting and staring off into the sunset and not wanting to do anything. And eventually we say, oh, that person's just become idle and sluggish, lost and lazy. The way we're trained when we're born is kind of the opposite of the way we end up, the way we want to actually be. We're trained to move a lot. We're trained as children, you got to go, go, go. You got to acquire, you got to get, you got to move, you got to kind of perform. And all of this actually, and we can see it as a terrible kind of training. At some point, we look back and think, boy, my parents set me up for failure. They didn't actually teach me about the way of understanding myself. Instead, they put me into the cattle line and I just went right off from school to work to debt to death. And we can see that as a negative, but actually the faster we get moving and pushed, actually the more beneficial it is, because we come to the same conclusion that the monastic did, that movement in and of itself isn't necessarily the answer. So stirring and attaching and clinging and seeking doesn't really lead to anything fundamentally different than just stillness. So we kind of have the wrong societally influenced ideas about life. Like, I need to attain things. I need to have things. I need to own things. I need to reestablish the self idea constantly. And this is so tiring. And it's so slavery driven. It's so controlling. And eventually, if we try hard enough to maintain and continue that self, the best thing happens. We let it go. We just say, you know what? I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore. This is ridiculous. And we just stop. And from that vantage point, we can step back and say, why am I defending and fighting for and cleaving and clinging and attaching for this thing when it never, ever, ever brings satisfaction? And even if I believe it brings satisfaction, it's never lasting. It always ends and it makes me go run again. So it's kind of a masquerading slave device, right? It just keeps whipping you. But you think that it's important and good and right because that's how society influences us. So that's good to be tired and overwhelmed and work hard and achieve and accomplish and be better than everybody else. And at the end of the day, we turn and say, no, actually none of those things are very productive at all, because I get worn and washed away and I never actually attain anything except just pain and suffering. So that system is actually, as we look from a further away vantage point and watch that process happen, we realize that's poison. We need to stop that. You know, the only way we're ever going to get along in any kind of regard as a humanity, as humans together, is to be free of that competitive advantage-seeking self. And if we don't recognize that, at every point in someone's life, you'll recognize it, whether it's 100 lifetimes from now or whether it's a year from now or a day from now. But you'll notice that that isn't the answer. It doesn't work that way. It never has. And I have proof. You can look back 5,000 years. There hasn't been any time where humanity has just become completely satisfied with each other, in our state, happy, and everyone's prosperous. There's always a massive imbalance. There's always terrible things happening and atrocities against humanity that shouldn't be there. We all know it and we see it. So the way we're working, the egoic system we're working in, is proven to fail. It fails every generation. And the proof is in the pudding. It's right in front of you. But never has humanity sought the opposite, which is to free ourselves from that egoic enslavement and try something new, try something different. So at some point, the good news is we're all going to grow tired of this. And you can see the weariness. in the suicide rate and the mental problems that we have in our communities today and the drug abuse and all the issues we have with pleasure seeking and the need to game and the need to seek internet fame and the need, all of these seeking and clinging things that happen all around us, that isn't helping anything. So in that regard, we need to be a little bit more wakeful and aware, and we can easily recognize it's not the way to go. And I think once enough people see that, it will naturally reverberate and wake up the rest of the community that might not be there just yet, but they'll start to see it as an example and say, hey, that looks good. Those guys aren't stressed. They're happy. There's no competitiveness. Everything seems to be going smoothly. Whether they win or fail, they don't recognize. They just see life, and everyone's living that pretty purely. I want that, right? I want some of that. And that's what starts the ball rolling. You know, hopefully there are enough people on this planet right now, God willing, that we can push that ball as far and fast as possible.
Well said. I love it. What if I decide to come into the website and I'm new, I'm looking and I'm engaging and considering how many people, you know, a lot of people, maybe most people, there isn't always a consistency and a dedication. We're in this drive-through mentality, this instant gratification world, this energy. And so I'm just, you know, wondering, what would you recommend for the person who is coming in for kind of like a template of success?
Well, I think the most important thing is that whether it's with us or anybody else, whether with the group we have and the group that's growing that we have constantly, or with some other person or group or somebody else that is able to point the way out a little bit, that just to live is reinforcement of the path. And I always say, when people say, well, you know, I want to see my success, I want to know what I'm going to get, I want to be able to get some gratification, and it has to be instant because that's the way I was born, raised, and influenced, I always just sit back and wait, because we don't have to do anything. The world will prove itself out to the person. In other words, they'll continually try to seek that gratification and realize it's not going to happen. And they'll always end up coming back to the long, short path, right? It seems long, it seems arduous, it seems difficult, but actually it's the shortest path to getting what we really want, which is self-examination and self-realization, as opposed to the short, long path, which is instant gratification, never really satisfying anything. So I can always just sit around, and it's happened for a long time, many, many years, where I see somebody on the path and they come and go. And I say, go do what you got to do. No coercion. Go run out there and have a good life, and I'll see you soon. And almost to a person, they come back at some point and say, I need help. I can see this isn't working out. And then we begin again. And the good news is, you never start from the same place. You always take that experience, and that also helps you become stronger and have a better intention. So it's actually good to go out and to say, I want to get more instant gratification. Okay, go do that. Burn that out, because that will make your intention and aspiration even stronger. And that long, short path will be even quicker. So in that regard, I always just let life do its thing. It always works out perfectly that the person realizes at some point, if you're patient and you're tolerant and all those things are there, that you'll see that they'll come back around and understand that they're got to face these things, these fears that we have, the fears we have about ourselves, the fears we have about each other. We have to overcome them. We have to. There's no way out of that. No one's going to come and do it for us. No one's going to solve those problems for us. No one's going to introduce ourselves to us. We need to understand ourselves from a very intimate and a very deep perspective. And it's only going to come when we start to face those fears through correction, through awareness, through wakefulness, and through the process. And then after that foundation happens, then you can go play with the deeper aspects of the light and understanding, like the joys that come with the path and the clarity and the wakefulness and the blissfulness and all the ecstasies that can happen in the path. But again, in the beginning, this kind of where we have to really strive to break through that. And that's the hardest part. And that's why you need something. You mentioned the website. We have a local sangha, a temple, this kind of thing going on, just like it's always been. It's just that now we have ways of reaching people further away. But, you know, thousands of years ago, they had a local monastery and people would go and say, I'm not sure whether I should give my life to this or not. And if the abbot or the minister, priest, or whatever was good at his job, he would say, go into the world. When you figure it out, come back, we'll be here. And that person would almost always come back, because once you have that bug, it's too late. It's not going to go away.
You mentioned fear, and that really struck me, because I think it's safe to say that fear can be behind a lot of the distractions. It can be around a lot of the problems, even deep-seated fear that's very unconscious, directing me. And so I'm just wondering, you know, we hear talk of embracing fear, facing our fears. What do you recommend as a way to move forward on the path while addressing that subject of fear?
I think always remembering that, and the people call realization or enlightenment or stream entry or the Holy Spirit, on and on, these different terms. Personally, I think I like the term ultimate authenticity, because really what it is, you're just being who you are without any derivatives. There's nothing in there shaking or iterating what it is you're saying, doing, and being. And that's really the freedom. You know, if fear isn't there, you can say and do anything without having any kind of self-imposed consequence. That's where we become truly liberated, where we can just be what we are without any fear at all on the most unconscious level. That's a beautiful place, because that is the entire shackle that binds us down to the self in the first place and drives us to suffering, is not being ultimately authentic. So if you say, like, you know, I just love people, you know, I want people to be happy, I want people to be joyful, I want everyone to have a great life, you know, I want everyone to have abundance. A lot of people won't convey those messages, even though they might feel them inside, because of fear of their own criticism or the criticism from other people. How sad is it that those words aren't proclaimed simply because the slavery-driven fear mind stops it, right? What if that wasn't there? Then we could tell other people how we really feel, what we really think, and reveal who we really are without any fear at all. That would be a fantastic thing. There would be no divisiveness. There'd be no cowardice. There'd be no coercion. There'd be no manipulation. We'd just say, this is what I am. You know, and we know the other person is authentic as well, and says, hey, that's what you are. That's good. This is what I am. That's a real relationship. The kind of relationships we have today are completely inauthentic, because they're two ego systems saying and doing what they believe, driven by fear, the other person wants to hear, and what we want to see. That's completely ridiculous. That's a terrible, stressful way of living life. The whole planet does this. That is insane. That's a disease. It's got to stop. So for humanity to take a step forward, we need to become ultimately authentic. And that's just being whatever we are without the fear-driven ego mind.
When you speak of ultimate authenticity, it gives me chills. It's such a feeling of freedom to be able to do what we are. I'm trying to imagine that. That's awesome. And I'm wondering too, is that the path? I mean, or is what we're seeking, the spirituality, this ultimate authenticity, this freedom?
Absolutely. I think in my heart, I feel that ultimate authenticity is the starting place for having a life created uniquely by each person. But we've got to be ultimately authentic first. We have to get there first. We have to scrub clean the inauthenticity that's within us. And then from that springboard, we can leap into life any way we want and paint it however we want. The fun can begin from ultimate authenticity. It cannot begin from inauthenticity. It can't begin from ego-mindedness, because that's false and wrong to begin with. That's shielded and blocked and not truthful and not authentic to begin with. So it's never going to be perfect and beautiful and right. So once we become ultimately authentic and we free ourselves within through that foundation process, then we can do all the other amazing, wonderful things that life offers and enjoy and accept and, you know, be able to be in each other's arms without any kind of issue. And that's beautiful. And that's the world we all want to live in. I just think people just don't understand what the problem is. So we are used to looking outside and pointing our fingers, and we're trying to turn stones over to figure out who is responsible for our mess. And if we keep doing that outside, like we've done for generations and thousands of years, we're never going to find it. It's obvious. We can blame people for bad government. You have the wrong convictions, the wrong ideologies, the wrong philosophies, and we can change those things. And yet we end up with the same problems again and again. And because of this unconsciousness, we don't wake and say, wait, maybe we're looking the wrong way, right? Maybe we're looking in the wrong direction. Let's try something new. And I think once you become authentic, then you can live life freely without being imprisoned in the egoic aggregates. And that is truly, I think, for me, from my perspective, the most exalted place on the path. And then, of course, there's all kinds of ancillary things you can do with that. You can kind of paint life in all different ways, which are unique and interesting to you, but you need to be there first.
I really resonate with what you're saying. And, you know, there's this torn feeling, because I feel that a lot of people are isolated. A lot of people don't necessarily have a lot of like-minded, a lot of like-hearted support in their lives. Unfortunately, not even our own family members. And so to do this, I'm just wondering if there is a greater advantage of being with people near each other, like you mentioned, locals who are in this process together, who just from our own interactions, we can be helping scrub that ego and seeking, having that same like-hearted desire for the ultimate authenticity. Could you speak a little bit on that?
Absolutely. I think the importance of who you're around bleeds out on you, and you become the group you're in. So if you're hanging around with thieves, you're going to probably become a thief. If you're hanging around with plumbers, you're probably going to be a plumber. If you're hanging around with police officers, you're probably going to be a police officer, know the law at least. So it's really important your environment is made to be supportive to your aspiration. And if you're in a negative environment and you're trying to be self-conscious and aware, and you're surrounded by unconscious and unaware people who are at that state, you're going to be fighting a battle on all fronts. And that's going to be a little bit hard to do. Not impossible, but hard. Again, everything's just obstacles. Whether you remove them or not is up to you, but you're going to have to get over them or get away from them in some capacity. So for me, I think that if you want to be around people who are positive and people who are looking to become self-aware and who want to make change, who want to make change within themselves specifically, then you need to get close to that kind of a group. That's the reason why I think it's so important to have other like-minded people around you during this process. If you're alone and isolated on an island and you're trying to do this, you can go to some dark places. The mind is going to fight you tooth and nail to maintain its control and its dominance, because that's what it's supposed to do, not because it's evil, but just because that's its job. Its job is to protect you. So that reptilian brain is there to say, no, you're sleeping. And I know how to watch for wild animals and, you know, traffic injuries and bad people. And so it's going to try to control as best it can your life for you until you wake up and say, okay, I've got control now. Thank you. But that exchange of control, that exchange of power, there's a struggle there because the lower mind is going to say, I'm not going to let go of this until I'm absolutely sure you know what you're doing. You're not going to get full control of this thing until I absolutely know you're awake and aware. So you've got to constantly kind of prove it out to it. So this is, I'm kind of making an analogy of how the two sides of the energies fight with each other or kind of dominate each other, but it's still true. It's like this. And so while you're going through that process, if you're with a bunch of people who are also going through that process, they all support each other. They all raise each other up. If you're around a bunch of people who have submitted to the lower mind, that egoic kind of mental aggregate base, it's going to be, you're fighting yourself and everyone around you. So it's imperative that you get in a good environment, at least find somewhere or something or some place you can retreat to so that you have some space of quiet and peace from it, at the very least, you know, space from it. And because of that, even if it's on the internet, even if you can get online and communicate and have that influence, that's amazingly better than not having anything. You need to be around that kind of energy for sure.
Excellent. Do you have any final thoughts on this subject, failure and the path?
I would say that just what we said in the beginning is most important, that failure is actually a really good thing. Don't be afraid of failure at all. Without failure, we couldn't wake up in any capacity. Failure is there to actually show us that we've made a change. And we shouldn't look at failure as a negative word. It's actually a very positive thing. And as I said earlier, more failure is better when it comes to our process. Whereas in the world, more failure, you get fired, you get left, you get divorced. You know, failure in our world is seen as negative, but on the path, it's an absolute positive because it shows that you noticed something. And noticing things is really important on becoming wakeful and entering into that extraordinary mind that we've all have, that we all possess. We just got to get the garbage out of the way. And once we reveal this, that authenticity becomes ultimate easily. It just is there. It's just persistent. As long as we get those little nagging habit energies out of the way. And yes, there's a process for that. And yes, there are easier and harder ways to do that. No question about it. So find somebody who has some experience with it, please. And have them say, don't do that. I did this. This is terrible. Don't do this. This will cost you another 5 years of path practice. Or find somebody who knows the path a little bit and cleave to them. Other than that, the whole goal here, the whole intention is for people to be happy, people to have good lives, people to be connected and relieve themselves from the suffering that's unnecessary.
It's great to see that our site, drewkama.com, is now open to the public. Is there any news about new content, new features?
For 2019, there is a tremendous amount of content that we're planning. We're going to do some experimental VR lectures where you can actually use your virtual reality phones and devices to get in with us and have the lectures together with us. We're going to have a bunch of new assemblies coming up, bunch of new teachings added, supportive materials added. It's going to be a huge amount of content continuously uploaded all through the year. But most importantly, the group itself is growing with new teachers every day, manifesting and creating as they become more mature and more aware on the path. That's the most important thing. And the teachings are vital, but you need somebody to kind of help you point out little things that you might not be ready to digest yet. So you may say, am I seeing this right? And you say, well, look at it this way. And suddenly you get that spark in your eye and say, oh, wow, I didn't notice that, right? Thank you so much. So you kind of need those friends, that supportive friendship, that base of teachers that kind of say, oh, what about this? Did you consider this? Have you seen this? This was hiding behind you. Turn around. And then you kind of say, wow, that helped me a lot. And so that supportive group is so important and so essential. And as I've always said, at some point, I would like to kind of fall back and become anonymous and go away. And the group runs itself through its teacher base. And as practitioners become more clear-minded, they can go out and help other people achieve the same kind of attainments and revelations. And it doesn't matter who began it, who pushed it, who lifted the first stone, totally irrelevant. Who I am, who you are, all of this is irrelevant. None of it matters. The only thing that matters is, are we headed in the right direction so that we and our children have a much better life with much less suffering? And that's only going to happen if we have this kind of self-evolutionary realization path in front of the people who are feeling the stresses and anxieties of life today. And that's the mission, and that's what we'll continue to push throughout the entire year and many years beyond that.
I love it. So exciting, so awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today, Daishi.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much. Again, I love these podcasts, and I appreciate them. I appreciate you guys helping out. And I know that if one person gets something from it, it's worth all the time and energy we put into them. So thanks again for being here.
If you have any questions or comments about the show, please email us at radio@drewkama.com. Thanks for joining us for today's show. We look forward to seeing you next time. Bye for now.